good morning and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and with Laron Landis. And on the phone with us, we want to get to him right away, is Representative Mark Vesey. He's the new congressman from the new 33rd Congressional District that runs from Oak Cliff all the way over to Fort Worth. Welcome, Congressman Vesey.
Thank you very much. Good to be on the show, David. I appreciate you having me on this morning.
We appreciate you spending time here talking to us. So big news this week for the LGBT community. And what I'm wondering from you, and what I'm talking about, of course, is getting rid of Prop 8, getting rid of DOMA. Are your colleagues on the opposite side of the aisle having complete apoplexy?
Well, let me just say that the Supreme Court got this right. While they certainly missed on Voting Rights Act.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one next.
Yeah, but they certainly got this one right. And all Americans deserve equal respect and treatment, no matter who they choose to love. And I was very happy about the decision, and I hope that, for once and all, we can sort of put this to rest. As we know, there are many members that are many citizens of the United States that are hardworking, pay their taxes, contribute to society, that are proud to be gay and lesbian, and this was long overdue. And so I'm happy as a member of the House LGBT Equality Caucus that this ruling was overturned, and this reflects the needs of American people living in the 21st century. But it's always going to be a problem for some of our friends on the right side of the aisle.
Heads exploding and such. And I heard this week that a reporter asked Nancy Pelosi what she thought of Michelle Bachmann's comment about it all, and she said, "Who cares?"
Oh my God, that's the perfect response.
It is.
It is.
And one thing they were thinking with the Prop 8 decision, it was going to take a while before they were able to implement it. The appeals court just lifted the stay, and they started yesterday. It took one day.
Yep.
Right.
Because exactly. It really isn't that difficult to do.
It's not.
Especially when many of the. And I'm getting a little echo. I can hear myself talking. So excuse me as I try to listen through that. But I can tell you that what I've been reading is that clerk. And other county administrators around the country say that it shouldn't be any problem to go ahead and get this done quickly.
Yeah.
And so it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah. Let's shift gears while we're talking about the Supreme Court, the Voting Rights Act. They gave us one thing, took away something else, and of course within 2 hours of taking away the Voting Rights Act, of course Texas had to act.
Exactly. And the sad thing about Texas acting is that the Texas voter ID law was found to be discriminatory. And so why you would want to try to move so quickly to enshrine something in the law that was found to be discriminatory by a panel of judges that was dominated by Republicans, it sends a bad message. It sends a bad message to people that are moving to our state in record numbers, to companies that are thinking about moving here. It's the wrong thing to do. Republicans need to work with Democrats and do the right thing to make sure that voting is equal and open to all people, regardless of their race or where they live or what their political views are. Because all this is about is making sure that people that are Democrats and African American and Latino don't vote. That's what this voter ID bill is all about. It has nothing at all to do with voter integrity. It has absolutely nothing to do with voter impersonation. It only has to do with suppressing the vote.
Can we back up and maybe explain a little bit exactly what the Supreme Court did in somewhat a little bit of detail? Because I think for the general public out there who don't understand what the Voting Rights Act is, I hit my niece, who's 21. She asked me, she goes, "So did they, I heard that they, that the Supreme Court overturned the Voting Rights Act altogether." And I'm like, no, that's not true. And I was trying to explain to her, and I don't know if I did a good job. So I'm sure she's not the only one out there. What exactly did they, what part of the Voting Rights Act did they say was unconstitutional, and what could that mean?
What the Supreme Court did was that they struck down Section 4. And Section 4 is the vehicle that makes Section 5, which makes sure that, that southern states, which has a past history of discrimination, were under preclearance. So before they make major changes in redistricting or rules that affect voting in southern states and local municipalities, they have to get these things pre-cleared to make sure that there's no discrimination. And by getting rid of Section 4, it basically gutted Section 5. Mm-hmm. And what they did was in the ruling was that they basically punted to Congress and said Congress should come up with something you know, that that is that that's more fair, because this is not
a new formula is what they're asking
exactly
for.
A new formula, knowing good and well that that the likelihood of that happening with this majority in Congress is not going to happen. And I thought it was one of the very low moments for the court. You know, I thought that the Justice Roberts was, you know, very serious about his legacy when it came to fairness for all people. But you know, but they show that that we too shall have to overcome this.
But on the face of it, I'd like a new formula, because I think the discriminatory acts of a number of state legislatures has gotten worse. I'd like a formula that includes, for example, Arizona. That's not included in the Voting Rights Act, and I don't trust them.
Right.
I don't trust them one bit.
Right, right, yeah, exactly. No,
But like you said, it's just not going to happen right now with this Congress, and the Supreme Court knew it.
No, right, right, exactly. Yeah, the Supreme Court knew it, and you're right. There should be other states outside of the ones that were in the formula, you know, last week. That should be in. I don't think there's any question about that.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at some of the stories that are out there about some of the voter suppression techniques that people are using in Latino and African American neighborhoods all around the country, it's shameful. And voters need some sort of protection from those sort of racist activities.
Yeah, you were saying how this was a low point for the court. I agree with you, and I specifically thought it was a very, very low point, probably the lowest point for Justice Clarence Thomas.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's like, dude, do you forget where you came from?
you would hope that he would draw upon his experiences of growing up in the segregated South and seeing
exactly
sort of refreshing up close and personal, that he would be able to learn from those things. But it's like he's just completely forgotten them.
Mm-hmm.
It's really sad.
It's really sad.
So what is this? I mean, a lot of people have been, barking their opinions, and particularly from the Texas GOP, since the decision. And it sounds like, you know, they're sort of gloating that they're going to be able to push through, like, this, you know, voter photo ID and, you know, all of this. How does that affect redistricting, and how does that specifically affect you and your new district?
Well, you know, the districts that we're currently running under now, the interim map, the legislature voted those maps into law, and the governor signed the bill just a few days ago. But there will be further legal action in starting next week in court in San Antonio in the lower court to make sure that these current maps are up to standards when it comes to the Voting Rights Act. And even though Section 5 was basically gutted, there still is Section 2. And we need to make sure that Section 2 is adhered to 100% moving forward.
Tell us what Section 2 is.
Section 2 is basically a vehicle that is used to make sure that discrimination is not taking place. But there's no, you don't have to pre-clear when it comes to Section 2. And so oftentimes, and one of the reasons why Section 5 was so critical was because Section 5, before a redistricting map or before a change in voting law could be implemented, it had to go through Section 5. It had to go through a preclearance on Section 5. Mm-hmm. With Section 2, you know, they'll be able to, states will be able to move forward, but at some point they may have to address discrimination. So it's still a tool to combat discrimination. There's just no preclearance to prevent that law from being implemented before it can be proven to be discriminatory. And so, but we still have Section 2, and that's important. But
and that's what you filed the lawsuit under, isn't it?
Exactly. I filed the lawsuit about stopping the implementation of voter ID under Section 2.
Hmm. And that so that could carry forward since it doesn't have to do with the decision then.
Just filed it this week.
Hey, absolutely. Yeah. No. Absolutely no. We feel strongly that this voter ID bill violates Section 2, and that's why the lawsuit was filed, and that's why we're going to continue to fight. We have strong ground under Section 2. Make no mistake about it.
Mm-hmm. I was just speaking with a few fellow Democrats the other evening about this, and we were laughing because if they brought the voter ID law back, voter photo ID law back in Texas, in my precinct and lots of other precincts where we're election judges, we have lots and lots of little old ladies who are still Mrs. Harry Smith, and that's not going to match their ID.
No,
they're not going to get the vote.
No, and they know this. And they know this, and the state also knows because their own data show this that 6 to 8% of voters that registered to vote after January the 1st, 2006, do not have the proper ID to vote under this law. You know, if you have a state issued ID or government issued ID from the University of Texas or from Texas A&M, or if you're a veteran, you cannot vote under this law. The only thing that you can use under this law would be your driver's license, an official state ID, or a concealed handgun license.
Not even a passport?
I have to check on the passport. Passport may be on the list, but there are very few things that you can use to vote.
Well, the other thing I think is your official membership in the Republican Party.
Right. Yeah. That's what they would like. They're trying to make sure that as few people vote as possible that don't believe in the same things that they do.
Right.
And that's not democracy. That's not what democracy is all about. Democracy means going out and reaching out to the growing number of Latinos and African Americans that are moving into the state, which 90% of the growth. The reason why we got all these new congressional seats, four new congressional seats back in 2011, was because we had 90% of the new people that moved to this state were either Latino or African American, and that is why we had this growth. But instead of reaching out to people and trying to build solutions that that people from the Latino and African American community would agree with Republicans on, maybe they decide that they want to discriminate, and that's dangerous. That is not democracy.
Now, one thing, you had a bone to pick with this Tea Party guy from Dallas. You didn't like something he had to say.
You know, that was, he basically said that, but the same thing what we're talking about now, that he didn't think that he would prefer African Americans just not vote, since he didn't feel that we were voting the right way, which is...
Wow.
Which is ridiculous.
But, you know, here's why I disagree with you on that. At least he was honest. At least he said what the rest of them are thinking.
Well.
So I like this guy for being so honest about how dishonest he is.
I would prefer that everyone, as many people vote as possible, regardless of how they feel about their issue or whether or not they agree with me. Mm-hmm. We need, in order for democracy to work best, we need as many people participating in the process as possible.
Right. And that's the sad thing, too. We were talking about this the other night, that if we work our butts off and we get the vote out, especially among people of color, among the poor, among the elderly, the people directly affected by this, if the voter ID thing proceeds in particular, then they'll say, see, we didn't need those preclearance things. We didn't need all of these other laws, you know, because they came out and voted. You know, well, I mean, it's like they'll feel rewarded for it in some way and spin it that way. I'm like, you know, it doesn't change the basic fact that you tried to suppress the vote, even if we succeed in getting everybody out again.
you have to, the intent is intent, and the intent of this bill is to discriminate, so it shouldn't be law. And I have to, and let me apologize. I do have to leave so I can make it to my next meeting. But thank you for having me on.
We want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And come back any other time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. And we're going to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Loron Landis. We'll be back with more. I think a lot of stuff happened this week, so we'll
just
have plenty to talk about. We'll be back with more right after this.
In Dallas, local partners and national nonprofit Connect to Compete have made available for residents digital skills training classes. Classes include basic internet searching, internet basics, computer basics, and more. Local residents are also eligible for programs that provide assistance for internet service and computers. For more information on internet classes at local libraries, their phone number is 1-855-387-9166 or on the web at everyoneon.org. This program is in partnership with Dallas Area Libraries, Connect to Compete, and the Ad Council.
When they're gone for good. This is Scott from KNON's Texas Blues Radio telling you don't miss out on some great blues. KNON's Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 Blues CD. It's a CD put together by real blues fans for real blues fans like you. Texas Blues Radio Volume 5 features great local blues from Michael J. and the Paul Bird Band, J.J. and the Detonators, the Chris Watson Band, the Two Tones, Rough Cut Blues Band, Jeff Stone with Charlie Love, Dave Millsap, Sirloin and the Ass-Kicking Machine, Tutu Jones, Blues Boy Bo, Buddy Whittington, Andrea Dawson, Kirkland James, Sonny Colley, and Johnny Red and the Roosters. Get a copy now at Forever Young Records in Grand Prairie, Record Town in Fort Worth, and in Dallas at Bill's Records. This is a Dallas Blues collector's item. A very limited amount of vinyl copies can be found at Forever Young Records, the sponsor of this great blues project. CD downloads are available at cdbaby.com. Whether you get it as a download, on vinyl, or on CD, all the proceeds will benefit KNON. For more info on Texas Blues Radio Volume 5, visit KNON.org.
I'm Christina from the Owens,
and I listen to Lambda Weekly
on 89.3 KNON FM. See you later.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Loron Landis and the late Patty Fink. And we want to thank Congressman Vesey for coming on with us for a segment. He had to run. I knew that when we booked him that he was real busy just running from one thing to another. You're going to see him this afternoon, though, or this evening.
Yes, I'm going to see Wendy Davis.
And he's going to be there, too.
I believe he is, yes.
Yeah. He's going to be there, too. It's a Stonewall.
Tarrant County Tarrant Stonewall.
Event. So Wendy Davis. So what happened with her this week? Was she busy?
If you didn't know her name before, you know her name now.
Uh-huh. Well, she was just, standing around all week, basically. But she led a filibuster, which is an old-fashioned filibuster. Nowadays in Congress, in Washington, D.C., you can filibuster something and sort of just do it virtually. Just say you're doing it. But she couldn't lean on anything. Mm-hmm. She couldn't, touch her desk.
Isn't that interesting? You can't even...
Yep.
Well, no bathroom breaks. That we know. That was part of the old rules. But the fact that you couldn't even touch your desk... Now, what I loved about this, the Republicans were coming up with objections, and you get three strikes, and then you're out, which is kind of an interesting way to do it, too. So if you violate the rules of filibuster. So what they were criticizing her about was talking about things that were unrelated. So some of the
not germane to the bill.
So some of the things that were not germane to the bill was any discussion of Planned Parenthood.
Yep.
Do you know why? Well, because those were the clinics that aren't going to close.
Oh, Lord.
The other thing that they objected to was one senator got up and he said, now the rules say that you can read from a paper. She's using an iPad. And they made her stop using her iPad.
Because they redefined the word paper. They also redefined the word midnight.
That was kind of fun. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, they broke the filibuster by coming up with these bogus reasons, because the last non-germane item was about, she brought up the ultrasound abortion bill from the last session, the last legislature, which they said was not relevant to the abortion bill she's discussing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, why don't we tell people what we're even talking about? She filibustered a new bill that would restrict abortion to up to 20 weeks.
well, after
20 weeks. Yeah,
right. And it would be one of the most restrictive laws in the country.
And, exactly. And here's where it would become extremely restrictive. There aren't a lot of abortions after 20 weeks anyway, and those are usually for the health of the mother.
Right.
There aren't that many late-term abortions. But it would mean that abortions, they would also say that abortions had to be performed in a surgical clinic, and they were saying this was to protect the life of the mother. And this is one of those things kind of like having voter ID because we want to get rid of all of the fraud that they've never proven has existed at all. They're in these other abortion clinics, there is no rate of people being rushed to the hospital in emergencies because of a botched abortion. That's
right.
Not happening. But what it would do is restrict abortions just to
those facilities,
surgical clinics.
Right.
Well, like the Planned Parenthood clinics are basically surgical clinics. So those would be the ones that would be left. And pro-abortion, against abortion, I don't really care. But if you're going to make restrictions, make it based on things that are happening. And if you're going to claim it's for the safety and health of the mother, then base it on actual fact, not stuff you're making up.
Right.
Last night, I talked to this group that was in town. It's a group of kids that come through every year on a teen tour doing a social justice tour. And when they come to Dallas, what they do is they talk to the anti-abortion side. And then come to us, and we're not particularly doing abortion with them, we're doing the gay stuff, but they were still talking about that. And it was interesting how the kids who are pro-choice for the first time saw what abortion looks like and were horrified by it.
Mm-hmm.
Rightfully
mm-hmm.
so.
It's
surgery. It's, you know, and they're showing these disgusting pictures to them. And what they really had to come to terms with was the fact, well, I'm pro-choice, but I don't really want that. And it's like, exactly, you are choosing not to do that and to be more responsible so that you won't need to do that except in an extreme circumstance, except if something happens, and then it's good that it's there just in case. That's the right attitude to have toward abortion. If you're pro-choice, not, oh, yeah, everybody, you know.
Right.
And don't make stuff up about it. Is it gruesome to look at? Yep.
Of course. Absolutely.
Of course.
No one ever said that abortion was a pretty picture.
Right. Right. So, you know, and so that's not the picture that we're painting, but the other side is arguing based on stuff that doesn't exist.
Right.
Stupid arguments.
You know, and I don't know, there's so much about this topic, and we haven't really discussed it on this show too much, but, you know, there's a lot of...
Because most lesbians are not going out and getting pregnant the way LaRon did.
Right. Now, we don't really have backseat accidents. You know, most babies actually born into gay couples, male or straight, are very planned, mm-hmm. very wanted. But I think that a lot of people feel, as do I, that I would not myself have an abortion. I don't think I would do that. But I would never, ever stand in the way of another woman's decision for herself.
Exactly. And I'd go a step further than that, feeling as though not just wouldn't I stand in the way, but there are certain reasons that somebody should have one. And let me go Jewish law. You protect the life of the mother first, always. And Israeli law is... I had a friend from college. She lived in the dorm room across the hall from me. She moved to Israel after graduation, and, oh, she must have been not much more than 30. She was pregnant at the time, but she needed to go through chemotherapy, and they couldn't do it while she was pregnant. And they aborted the baby. She died anyway, like within 2 months. Just horrible situation.
Wow.
But the baby wasn't going to live, and she would have had no chance to live. That, you know, stop interfering when we're talking religiously. Stop interfering with my religion. My religion says you protect the life of the mother first, foremost. That's what you do. And I strongly believe that.
Well, it's particularly difficult to listen to some of these people in the legislature, and I speak specifically of the Texas GOP, in pushing these laws, because it's so clear that it's a patriarchy, it's a daddy state.
Well, what about
they're looking for?
What about the female representative?
I know,
Plano?
That's what I'm coming to. Is that they don't even get their facts correct, and maybe they're taking classes that they impose the same classes they're imposing on Texas school children. That they have to be ignorant about these things, but she doesn't even understand basic female reproductive organs.
Because what she said
from the floor of the Texas Senate was that there are these things called rape kits. Now we know what rape kits
are.
Right?
Rape kit
they're
is
to collect evidence
after a rape,
potential evidence after rape. And she said there are these things called rape kits, and they clean a woman out. And so she can't become pregnant from a rape because
they have rape.
Yes.
Oh dear God, are you serious?
Seriously.
Yeah.
She's from Jody Laubenberg,
from
right up here from
Plano.
Wiley and Allen.
And Plano.
Yeah. And we're talking that, you know, the rape kits clean a woman out.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from that genre of text of Republican who is so stupid that they can't even get their science right. Basic science that everyone, I mean, the laughter at this woman's ability to even function based on that statement is amazing. I mean,
well, let's run with that for a second and say it was true, which we know is not. Let's say that was true. Well, what about the women who don't report their rapes? Because a lot of rapes go unreported. So she couldn't have an abortion either?
Well, one of the changes they were making in the bill that finished the House in D.C. and will never pass the Senate, you know, give us like 48 hours to report.
Okay,
it.
So
this is the kind of stuff that they're
are
doing.
You serious?
So if you're like a 14-year-old
exactly.
kid that's being repeatedly raped by your father, you got 48 hours to report it.
Exactly.
Or you lose the right to send him to jail? I mean, it's insane. It's all insane. It's just insanity. And it doesn't even allow for a woman's common sense. It's men, it's old white guys telling
okay,
women
so,
in Texas.
So how's
what
this for a restriction? These kids are telling us what this guy is talking about. And in order to get any kind of help after getting pregnant and after having an abortion, The only way you should get any kind of help is by the woman first admitting she did something wrong.
It's insane. You know, instead of having a bill that mandates that they teach young men all the way through school that not to rape, do not rape.
When a girl says
it's,
no,
it's put
she
it all
no.
on the woman. You know,
right?
It's insane. It's the whole thing's insane.
Wow.
Do you know some of these kids who were not really buying all the arguments, the anti-abortion arguments, but actually, they said, yeah, choice, but I'm thinking about it more seriously now than I ever have before. He got to some of those wackier points, like, yeah, the woman has to admit she did something wrong, and you know, one of the guys in the group said, yep, that's where he lost me. You know, he said I was actually buying some of his garbage, and but he said when he got to some of that nonsense, who can even listen to that garbage? And you know something, if the anti-abortion people wanted to gain more people to their side, that, you know, let's limit abortion. Okay, if there were 1,000 abortions, let's get that down to 500 abortions. You could do it through sensible education.
Yes, teach people
exactly.
how they get pregnant. Teach teach how to stop.
Be
give
so
the possibility
easy.
Of getting pregnant.
It would be so easy to decrease the number of abortions.
Oh, that's what the whole constellation of everything is so stupid.
Right.
Is that we're going to limit your education. You're going to be stupid and ignorant. And just don't do it. And then when you do, then, you know, we're going to shut you down, basically.
Well, and the problem with
this
is...
And you have no choices after that.
The problem with a lot of this is that half of the people who don't believe in abortion at all also don't believe in any kind of birth control.
Yes.
So but
they
do believe in the death penalty, yeah. which is just insane. Because this week, Texas executed
their
its 500th person, who is Kimberly McCarthy from mm-hmm. Dallas County.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From Langford.
All right. Arizona. Well, since Patty's not going to have an abortion, I did not abort.
Right.
Let's move on to a topic that really does affect us.
And Lauren isn't even looking at me to say whether or not I've had one.
Well, I just want to know,
afraid of what the answer is going to be.
I just want to note, though, that in all of this, from the start to finish with Wendy Davis's filibuster of this bill, it did not pass.
Right. It worked.
The filibuster worked, but for about the last 10 minutes from the time the Senator Letitia Van de Put, who had just come from her father's funeral, her father's funeral, was asking to speak on the floor, she made a statement asking what does it take for women to be recognized when they raise their hands over the men in the Senate floor. And the crowd erupted. And so it wasn't just Wendy Davis's filibuster. It was Texas senators all day and all evening who were asking her questions, engaging her in dialogue, using up the time.
It's difficult if just one of us is here. Right. How do you fill the hour?
Right. You got to have some dialogue.
Yeah. 12 hours.
And so they got to that place, and then in the last 8 to 10 minutes, they had stopped the filibuster, claiming these three strikes against her. And so when Letitia Van de Put asked this question, the crowd in the gallery, and let's be clear, though, that was not just the gallery. It was down the hall, all four levels of the rotunda.
There were thousands of people there.
There were 3,000 to 4,000 people in the Capitol and extending out onto the grounds for the into the night.
Because they locked the doors finally, right, and people kept coming.
So in that last 10 minutes, it was really a people's filibuster, mm-hmm, because they yelled and screamed so much that Lieutenant Governor Dewhurst could not gavel order to do the, mm-hmm, vote. And so the vote actually started at 12:02.
But they turned the clock back.
And then so what Dewhurst did was he turned the clock back on the official Texas Senate website that said it was actually done before midnight, June 25th, not June 26th, which is illegal. That's tampering with a public record, and the DA in Austin, Rosemary Lemberg, with her public integrity unit, is investigating that because it's illegal.
Not that she has any money anymore, because they stripped all money from her office.
Perry stripped her office, but or that unit's funding. But what he did was illegal, and it's one of the reasons I believe he folded and said, "I agree, SB 5 is dead," because the legal challenge to this is overwhelming. I mean, you have 100,000 people watching online. Just imagine a moment. 100,000.
200,000.
From not just Texas, but around the world and around the country. Everyone is talking about this.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to cheat in front of that many witnesses?
Yeah.
I was like, that's the answer. You serious?
Yeah.
That's what he's going to do.
Yeah.
And so I think when they came in there and said, "Your butt's grass. This is not going to fly." Mm-hmm. I think that's when he finally said, "Okay, it can't be." Because they had the proof. Here's the before and after. Because it's computerized. They vote by computer. It's all up there. June 25th, down the line. June 26th, and then it was changed to June 25th. Mm-hmm.
That was an amazing filibuster. And one of the things that makes it so amazing is that the little chickens in Washington used to do a filibuster like this. They don't do that anymore.
Right.
It's like, we're filibustering. Okay, next bill. Well, that's not a filibuster.
Yeah, they're just saying they are, and it's...
All they've done is they've changed the rules so that it takes 60 votes to pass anything instead of 51.
And then, just before we go to the break real quick, though, I wanted to throw out that text to Hillary that everybody sees around social media. There's the photo of Hillary on her... or C-130 or whatever, and she says to Wendy Davis, "Hey, girl, want to do lunch?" And then Wendy Davis says, "Lunch is for wimps." Hillary says, "You're a badass."
Yes, it's a great photo.
It is
a good photo. Why don't we take our break, take it a minute earlier. So you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and with Laurent Landis, and we'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
GoodSearch.com provides a way for you to support nonprofits like KNON with your online shopping and dining. GoodSearch.com offers a downloadable toolbar for searching from your computer called GoodApp, so your purchases can go to support KNON. With Good Dining, every time you go out to eat at participating restaurants, then a portion of what you spend gets donated to KNON. Registering is easy at GoodSearch.com, and KNON 89.3 is the name to enter in your account settings for charity selection. Support KNON with your online shopping and dining at GoodSearch.com.
KNON is pleased to announce the release of Aaron Burton's latest CD, The Return of Petey Whitestraw, this Sunday, June 30th, upstairs at the Tavern on Main Street in Richardson. Doors open at 4 p.m. and the music begins at 5. Aaron will be doing both a solo acoustic set and then later a full band set. His guest will be the Jason Cloud Band. Included in the ticket price is a barbecue dinner provided by award-winning competition cookers, the Pirates of the Prime Band of Richardson, Texas. Sound and lighting courtesy of DJ Sound and Lighting of Dallas. Big Texas Blues hostess Blue Lisa will be your MC. Seating to this event is limited, so get your tickets now at KNON.org or stop in at the Tavern on Main Street, located at 115 East Main Street in Richardson. There's plenty of parking behind the Tavern on Main Street. That's Aaron Burton's CD release party with the Jason Cloud Band and award-winning barbecue from the Pirates of the Prime Band competition cooking team this Sunday, June 30th, at the Tavern on Main Street in Richardson. This is a KNON benefit event.
This is Jason Wright from Dallas, and I listen to Lambda Week 89.3K.
And welcome back to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis and the late Patty Fink. And we haven't talked much about the big Supreme Court rulings this week. I mean, we talked about Voting Rights Act
and
what a terrible one that is, and Wendy and her abortion filibuster.
Well, I was just going to make a quick note about her Mizuno shoes. Yeah, there's some great reviews on Amazon of her shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Because she just, you know, got up that morning and took her tennis shoes out of the closet and put them on, and that's what she's going to wear that day.
Mm-hmm.
But they're a specific, they're a Wave Rider something something 16S Mizuno running shoe, right? And they're pink. And one of my favorite reviews of the shoe on Amazon was, "I just love the pink or and the yellow, but I can't decide which one. If only someone had a penis who could make the decision for me." It's one of my favorites. But if you get a chance, go out to Amazon, look up the shoe, and read the reviews. They're just hysterical.
That is hysterical.
But this week, of course, the Supreme Court made two huge decisions.
We've been waiting forever for this.
One of them, the Prop 8 decision, was kind of expected when Ken Upton from Lambda Legal was on the show. It came out exactly the way he expected, which was it was based on standing.
Right.
Meaning that if the state accepted the lower court's ruling, a group of people can't then come along and say, "Oh, but no, I want to challenge it." Now, the appeals court allowed this group to come along and challenge the law. What the Supreme Court said was, if you were in no way harmed, and that
and
was
they
interesting.
Were not.
And they were.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because the court, in ruling this way, and it was Chief Justice Roberts who wrote this one. If you weren't harmed, and you were not. That's big, and that's the part that I think got lost in this,
mm-hmm.
that they were not harmed. Our marriages don't hurt your marriages. That's what he was saying.
And your head exploding because of something that happens to other people, it doesn't count.
It's your problem. It doesn't count, exactly.
Right, you have control over your head not exploding.
Yeah. So it was remanded to the lower court, so it's Judge Walker's ruling. It was not even the appeals court ruling. It's Judge Walker's. Brilliant
decision.
75-page decision.
Yeah, I think
that stands. And marriage started yesterday.
Now, they're upset, of course, because usually a court has to issue a mandate before whatever, which completely closes out the case. And I think they had 25 days, the Supreme Court had 25 days to do that. And before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals would lift their injunction, and they didn't wait that long.
Yeah,
they did it immediately.
Yeah, you have 25 days to do it. Doesn't mean it gets done on the 25th day.
Exactly. They don't understand that.
It's kind of like your homework is due next week. It's okay to do it tonight.
Exactly.
Because all they had to do in this case was lift the stay.
And they did.
And they were ordered to do so by the Supreme Court. So it's
right.
It's a no-brainer.
The Supreme Court also said that the sodomy laws are illegal. Texas still has them on the books.
Yes.
Because why haven't they removed them? Because we don't want to. And part of the problem...
No, Texas GOP doesn't want to.
Well, and part of the problem is that the Supreme Court ruling didn't say, and you have 25 days to fix your laws and get this off the books.
Right.
And on that note, 10 years to the day, Lawrence v. Texas... as well as Perry and Windsor on the same exact
day. On Tuesday, when they announced that the Supreme Court ruling would come on Wednesday, the 26th, rather than Thursday, which is a more traditional day to issue. I knew it was going to be Kennedy writing DOMA, and I knew it was going to come in our favor in a big way. Just for the historic marking of 10 years, right. I knew it was going to come down this way.
Well, thank God you were right.
The DOMA case.
I think is a bigger ruling.
It is, of course.
Well, and there was an op-ed piece in the New York Times or Washington Post a few days ago asking, is Kennedy the gay justice?
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah,
you know, just because Clinton was the first black mm-hmm. president because Kennedy has written. He wrote the Lawrence decision.
He also wrote the Romer v. Evans decision. Yes. So this is his third pro-gay decision.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in this decision... Do you want to explain what it was, what the basic court ruling was?
In DOMA.
In DOMA.
In DOMA. In DOMA. Well, there are really two sections to DOMA. Section 2 says that states do not have to recognize each other's marriages.
Mm-hmm. That stands.
And that stands. That's still there. So DOMA's not really dead.
No.
It's just a piece of it is dead. And Section 3 says that the federal government cannot recognize marriages that are not one man, one woman. And it was Section 3 of DOMA that was struck as unconstitutional. So the federal government now, and as Ken Upton pointed out at our rally earlier this week, and Ken Upton is the attorney from Lambda Legal, he pointed out that the fact that under this ruling, the marriage is what prevails, not the place. And so if you, Laron, you and Danny are married under the eyes of the federal government, even though you live in Texas.
Right.
And
we
so
are
for
now.
Federal purposes, you are married. You can file joint taxes. You can do Social Security. And all of those agencies will be rolling out their changes and rules and such. But you're married.
And that's effective immediately.
Well, until you have to know what the rules are.
Right. But. And here's one of the problems. There are certain benefits that have to do with where you live, and there
right.
are certain benefits that have to do with where you were married and whether the marriage was valid in the place where it took place. So for immigration, for example, immigration...
And this is a big one.
This is a big one. But for immigration purposes, it has to do with whether or not your marriage was valid. There was a good reason for that when they wrote these laws. It was because if two people are married, chances are it's as likely that they were married in another country as it was that they were married here, because we're talking about binational couples.
Right.
So if I had a spouse that was from another country, I could bring that spouse. We could now apply for a green card just like any heterosexual couple could do. So that one is clear. And immigration law, they knew ahead of time this was planned. That one was clear. Army benefits or military benefits, that one wasn't clear, but the Pentagon was ready for this, and they announced the first day that spouses of military people are going to get full benefits. So you can get the card to get on the base. You can get health benefits. You can...
Housing.
You can get the housing, everything, and they were ready for it. And the reason I know that they were ready for it, they wouldn't have announced... There
right.
will be full benefits the next day. They would have said, well, now we have to just go through our... They had gone through.
No, they were ready.
Social Security. Some Social Security benefits have to do with where you live. So it's not clear where Social Security stands and how much you're going to collect and if you can collect. So rules need to be written. Medicare, same way.
Taxes, on the other hand, are pretty straightforward. There are some taxes, however, that the state taxes are... This is where more lawsuits may come, mm-hmm. because some state taxes pivot off of
federal.
And that's what happened with Edie Windsor in New York. She's actually owed something like close to $800,000, not just the $363,000 that she paid to the federal government in estate taxes when her partner, Thea Speier, passed away. But she paid the state of New York $275,000 because they write their estate tax law that pivots on what you would be paying the federal government. And so they do a formula off of that. And then she gets interest. So it's something
here's
insane,
something,
like $700-something, $800,000.
Here's something that had not been discussed at all. She owed all these taxes. What did those two do? I'm talking about what was their career?
Oh, yeah, yeah. They obviously had...
Well, they had
money.
Two homes. They had a home on Long Island, I believe, and then they also had a home in the city.
Right, but my point is...
What was their careers? What were their,
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. And
but they've been together for 42 years.
I got that. And you know, and good for them. And they were either incredible savers.
Maybe they had some family money. Maybe they had
I was just curious.
Yeah. Where successful.
Because if Danny and I got stuck with that bill, I'd be SOL. I don't have that kind of money.
You don't have that kind of money. Exactly. So I was just wondering.
Yeah.
And that's partially why it was the perfect case. And, you know, she's in her 80s, so she comes across as this sweet older woman. But she was an older, real successful woman.
Yes.
Or real successful
exactly.
couple.
And I think because she's 83, they didn't talk about her career very much.
And Clint is asking her, what's her name? Edie Windsor was her name. They were from New York.
Look up for us.
Yeah, so Clint's going to look that up, see if he can find. I was just curious. You know, it's just one of those things that was never mentioned during this.
Right.
Well, as Patty pointed out, Doma is still alive. It's just that section, which was a huge section, is gone now. But I believe I read that it has already been introduced to repeal the entire Doma.
Yeah, and that's what my sarcastic first question to Representative Easy had to do with. It was, are there any shenanigans going on behind the scenes to see how we can really hurt the gay community again?
Mm-hmm.
That, yeah, it'll probably be declared unconstitutional again. But you saw how long it took. This was a 1996 law, or 1997 law, that took till 2013 to get repealed, and not repealed, but found unconstitutional. So they passed something now. It's at least 5 years. From the time it first hits the courts,
right,
until.
But let's look at this because we've been discussing this with people around the web and people we know, and it obviously as activists we deal in this stuff all the time and think it through. But we have a situation now where in 12 states, soon to be 13, and now 14, because California is on board, and 13 when I believe Minnesota begins doing marriages in the beginning of the year, so it's 14 states. Plus the District of Columbia in January, right? So that's a big chunk of the country. Mm-hmm. So we have these other states, some of them who are silent on marriage and their constitutions and their laws.
Five or six.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And marriage equality. And then we have those that have outright bans. Mm-hmm. And if you're, like Texas, have a super DOMA in their constitution means it's not just you can't have marriage, you can't have any sort of recognition of your relationship,
no partnership or anything,
no civil union, all of that. And so we're looking for what's the state that could really underscore these disparities and that would get rid of Section 2, right? Jeremy Davis from the National Stonewall Democrats speculated that might be Colorado. Because in Colorado, they have civil unions, but they have a ban in their constitution on marriage equality. So a couple lives in Colorado, they get married, they get a civil union, and they reside there. Another couple married in California moves to Colorado. They're married. In California, they're married by their recognized by their state, recognized by the federal government.
Right.
They move to Colorado where they're married, and so they automatically are considered civil union in Colorado. And yet, they get federal benefits. And the couple next door, who has only a civil union, gets nothing. And so now we have two couples with exactly the same circumstances under Colorado law,
mm-hmm.
who are getting treated unequally.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's, I think, a prime example of some of the things that are going to come about to put real pressure on the Section 2 part of DOMA that they're going to have to recognize.
Right, and I think the way a couple of states are going to deal with it is by changing their civil unions into marriage.
New Jersey,
Illinois. Although
that's what Vermont did.
Jersey has a governor that's blocking it right now. I mean,
he
got...
Ooh, who is that?
Exactly.
Did you see his interview after? Oh, my God.
Oh, he was vicious.
So
It wasn't just that he said he was against the ruling. It was vicious.
It was vicious.
It was vicious
and
against
again,
the gay
some
community.
Of the things that he was saying is flat out lies, and it's like that's not factual. You know what he was saying from our point of view. He's saying we weren't being consistent on what we wanted. Ugh.
Hey, David.
Mm-hmm.
Edie Windsor was a top programmer at IBM.
Oh,
there you go.
And Thea Spire was a psychologist.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
Thank you, Clint. You know, and you know something, that's two really actually working class, middle class people. They must have been great savers. Because right. if she had the $800,000 to pay in taxes.
But if you work at, you say she was a programmer at IBM, yeah. she was making pretty big bucks.
And worked her way up in that company.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm saying
she put herself through her master's degree program working as a secretary, and then after her master's degree got a job at IBM and became a top programmer at IBM.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
That's what I'm saying, is somebody who just worked her way up. That wasn't family money. That wasn't.
No.
Those were two people who just smart and.
And she was probably there in the heyday of IBM
mm-hmm.
when it was being a top programmer there was a really big deal.
Right.
I mean, today it's a different case, but you know, but she's 83, so she's been out of the workforce a long time. So she's obviously was a top programmer there back in his, you know, big.
The article also said that she retired early when Thea got sick.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay.
So,
okay. Huh.
Wow.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yep. Huh. But I mean, if you listen to her speak. Did you see her press conference afterwards? She's a woman in her 80s.
And she's gorgeous. I think she's 80, yeah, 83. She's just gorgeous.
She is.
Yeah. But she is sharp as can be. You know, that's the person that was representing us through the Supreme Court. Wow.
Yeah.
What a wonderful... You know what? We need to get her on as a guest.
Yeah. That would be great to get her on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be really awesome.
We'll work on that.
There's a little something that Patty and I were... talking about on Facebook this week with a few other people, and that was that Kennedy seemed to be in one case on our side and not on our side on the other, and same thing with Roberts. And that's really not exactly the case, which I was trying to point out.
Well, and Justice Sotomayor and...
Right.
The way the Prop 8 case shook out, the alliances were real odd.
They were real odd, but they really never ruled on the merits of the case, though. They just,
well, no.
That's why.
They ruled on standing.
They ruled on standing.
But we won that case with Scalia. Scalia was on our side. Thomas was against. Sotomayor was against. But Kagan...
But see, that's what
the dissenters were Kennedy, Thomas, Alito, and Sotomayor.
Right.
So in the Prop 8 case.
But I guess I'm having...
That's just an odd alliance.
It is.
A very odd alliance. I guess I'm having trouble with saying that they were on our side.
They weren't.
They just didn't really want to deal with the case.
No.
And
They
believed standing, but it came out in our favor. Mm-hmm. But had they said, okay... Let's say all of them say, okay, this case does have standing. Who knows how they would have ruled?
But what's interesting... I think they would have ruled. They would have ruled the 5-4 that we got in the DOMA case.
Well, I truly believe that Kennedy and Sotomayor would have voted... voting on the merits. And I think
exactly.
That's why they dissented, because they said, no, these people have standing, and we should be deciding the merits.
Precisely what I'm saying, Pat.
Not,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's why they ended up on the dissenter side.
Right.
But it's
not
so
that they're
interesting.
Against,
but that doesn't mean that they were against us.
But right. It's so interesting that Roberts and Scalia... came down on the side that made us win.
Yeah, that is interesting.
But the win was, I think,
strange
what their
bedfellows.
Their strategy was keep it only in California. I think it had the other five ruled on the merits of the case, the others were worried about, or maybe this is what they were debating during their debate in the back rooms. They were trying to say, not only is it illegal here to vote against somebody's rights, but elsewhere, too. And so Scalia was saying, okay, damage control will give marriage to California by saying these people had no standing. But in the decision itself, the Prop 8 decision is interesting because it does specify, it's not just they didn't have standing, but it says they were not hurt,
right,
which is
right,
actually
right.
deciding on part of the merits of the case.
If they're in both of these opinions, in the Prop 8 case and the DOMA, there's one, if you read what Kennedy wrote, he came short of saying everybody in all states should have the right to marry. Mm-hmm. He didn't say that, but I'm paraphrasing, but he stopped. So that's going to be used. That's going to be used, I think, a lot in a lot of other court cases, because this is not over by far.
You know, I was talking to Bowen Major, and we need to wrap this up. I was talking to Bowen Major. They're thinking of filing a lawsuit based on Edie Windsor's win. Edie Windsor, if she was married to a man, she owes nothing. If she's married to a woman, she owes $500,000 or $800,000 total taxes. Unconstitutional, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if Bowen and a woman go to the Marriage Bureau, they pay $50, they walk out with a license. If Bowen Major go to the Marriage Bureau, they go up, try to pay their $50, they get arrested. Based on that, it's exactly the same unfair.
Right.
It's exactly the same unfair. Need to throw that out.
Yep.
So that brings us to the end of another Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet. I'm here in the studio with the late Patty Fink and Laron Landis. I'm off the next 2 weeks.
I'm not here next week either.
Yeah, so join me and C.D. Curvin, the always loud and interesting C.D. Curvin, next week.
I'm going to listen to it afterwards because it's going to be a fun show. And we'll see you next week.